Well, good morning, class, and welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Brad Sesmet Show. I'm Jeff Munn from the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the mystery should at last be solved for many of you. When the Diamondbacks are on the road, I get asked a lot, where do you do the pre- and post-game shows? Are you on the road? Well, I'm sitting here in the Phoenix area at the secret headquarters of the Brad Sesmet Show. It's a secret known only to those of us who work the show, but it is here in the Valley, and that should answer your question. No, I do not go on the road all the time, occasionally. I don't even know why we're going into this. I'm Jeff Munn from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Thank you for being with us here today. I keep looking at the monitor, not the camera. Hi, how are you? This is the Brad Sesmet Show for a Wednesday, and as usual, a whole bunch of things to talk about with all of you and a great lineup of guests. Obviously, basketball is a big topic, and we will talk with Suns radio analyst Tim Kempton about last night's game in the NBA Finals, which, even with the lopsided score, I think was one of the more interesting and captivating games to a certain extent of this final so far. But we'll talk with him about that. Diamondbacks television analyst Bob Brenly will join us from Houston to talk about Chase Anderson. And I want to get his reaction because I didn't hear it, obviously, because I'm over on the radio side, to the moves that Bo Porter made, the Astros manager, on Monday night, which seemed to be the topic of discussion, at least for a lot of people around the D-backs water cooler yesterday. The D-backs will be in Houston tonight to open a two-game series. We got a few other things to get into. They call this segment, I wish you could see this, we get a rundown sheet every day of what we're doing on the show, and we'll have a segment called Munn's Fun Things. I love to do this because I get to vent about things that go on in my life. I just don't get any other opportunity to do that.
And most of them have probably absolutely nothing to do with sports, which is both intriguing and dangerous.
That's
all at the
Eric
same time.
Sorensen, by the way. Hi. I was going to introduce you.
I just introduced myself on the show.
Yes. So. Or should I look up you? This is like the Brady Bunch. You're up in the corner. Should I look up at you? And
no, just look at me right here. Look at me.
Up this way.
No, right here. I gotcha.
Okay. All right.
Hi,
Mom. Very good.
Good to have you in.
Here's story. Wouldn't you want to be in the middle square if we were doing that? Anyway, never mind. All right, onward and upward. We have a lot to get to, so let's get right to it. The top stories of this day are brought to you by the Honda Casino Resort and Casino located in the beautiful White Mountains just outside of Pine Top in eastern Arizona. Head up now, enjoy their beautiful cooler weather. And boy, yeah, you could really enjoy cooler weather right about now. That's the Honda Resort and Casino. Last night in Miami, Game 3, the Spurs 19-point winners over the Heat 111-92. A game that was not – it was really interesting, and I must confess I did not watch the game. I listened to most of it on the national radio broadcast. I have a satellite radio in my car, and I can go back and forth between the local broadcasters and the national broadcast on ESPN Radio. And Hubie Brown, who was doing the color on the national broadcast, kept saying, if Miami just gets this thing to 15 by the end of the first half, they're fine. He's right. I think the one thing about the Heat, and they are a very good defensive team in spite of what happened last night, if they can just keep a game relatively close, they have the offensive firepower to get back in it. But that was an issue against the Spurs last night, and in part because of the work of a guy that I know that Spurs fans love him, but he doesn't get a lot of national attention, and that is Kawhi Leonard.
Ginobili, pocket pass to Splitter at the free throw line. Left wing Leonard fakes a three, drives it inside. Leonard against Bosch, off the glass, shot is good for Kawhi Leonard. With 4:15 remaining in the game, the Spurs lead 104-86. Kawhi Leonard with 28 points.
Bill Schoening on the Spurs radio network. And yeah, Kawhi Leonard is a guy, and people will talk. I'll just say this very quickly. People will talk a lot about the Spurs and, oh, it's Duncan, it's Ginobili, it's Parker. But there are things that they do, and R.C. Buford, their general manager, and Greg Popovich have done a terrific job in building the rest of that roster. Leonard, Tiago Splitter. What they're getting out of Patty Mills this year, Patty Mills was just out. He wasn't anywhere to be found in the NBA a couple of years ago, and he had some big buckets for him last night. Now, Leonard was the guy getting most of the attention, in particular from head coach Greg Popovich after the game.
We just wanted to be who he's been the whole year, you know, in the regular season and in the playoffs. And I think the foul situations the first two games really He overreacted to them and became very cautious. And he doesn't play like that. He's got to be real active at both ends.
That's a really good point, and it's a point for the entire Spurs team. And again, going back to the radio broadcast, John Berry, who was also on the national radio broadcast last night, said, when you get out to as big a lead, and the Spurs were just, what was it? They shot 70-something percent from the field.
They started out 19 of 21 from the field.
I
encourage anyone to go out in their front yard and with no one guarding you and see if you can make 19 of 21 shots from
around
your
driveway. And they had not only people guarding him, but a really good defensive team guarding him, and they went 19 of 21. But John Berry made a great point. He said, it's hard to have a 25-point lead early in a game. Because what do? Your instinct tells you, okay, ease off the gas pedal, don't expend so much energy, but you also run the risk of allowing Miami to get back in the game because early in the second quarter, there's a ton of time left. And both he and Hubie Brown kept saying, no, you have to keep the foot to the gas pedal, and you have to keep attacking. You can't be passive offensively defensive. It's tough. Now, as Eric was pointing out, a terrific shooting night for the Spurs. This isn't the first time this has happened in this series. If you go back to game one, when they knocked down a ton of threes late to put the game out of reach, the Spurs have really caused a lot of problems for the Heat defensively. And so LeBron James was asked after the game, what makes them so hard to defend?
Spread you out. They have multiple guys that can make plays. It's kind of like us. They share the ball extremely well, and those guys are always in the right spot. I mean, if they ran a set, they can close their eyes and know exactly where guys are going to be at. And it's the system they've been in. They do a great job of filling one another out, and every guy that's on the floor can make a play.
And that's something we'll bring up with Tim Kempton when we have him on in a couple of minutes. It's not just the basic half-court sets that they run. They always seem to have an option two, a plan B, a plan C in their half-court sets, and it always seems to be effective. A lot of that is due to the experience that the big three have had with Greg Popovich. A lot of it is also just the fact that they are so fundamentally sound and handle the ball very well. Game four? Yeah. Spurs lead the series 2-1. And game four is tomorrow night in Miami. Other news in the NBA, Derek Fisher finally officially introduced as the head coach of the New York Knicks. Another guy fresh out of a playing career goes in, takes over on the bench. Interestingly enough, one of the more recent hires of that kind is right across the way in Brooklyn with Jason Kidd and the Nets. But as Derek Fisher pointed out in his introductory press conference yesterday, he's always considered himself a coach on the floor.
In the last 18 years as an NBA player, in this business, that's the only reason I've been around for 18 years, is that I've thought the game as a coach, the angles, the advantages, the disadvantages, the spacing, defensively, the best way to do things, especially as a guy that continued to age in this league. How can I defend and still be effective?
I think also, and we can discuss this with Tim Kempton as well if we get a chance, I think there's two things with the Derek Fisher hiring. With young coaches or players or coaches just removed from playing, the theory is that they relate better to players. The other thing is, in a situation where Phil Jackson is running things in New York, and I've heard this mentioned, I think it's true, Phil doesn't want to be the head coach on a day-to-day basis, but that doesn't mean that he wants to not be involved in coaching the team. So you have to have a guy who's willing to adapt to that, and Derek Fisher is willing to adapt to it. As far as the players are concerned, Amari Stoudemire says there's no question the Knicks need direction.
With having Derek, I mean, obviously at this point we need to get on the right track as a team. We need to figure out how to win. And hopefully with Derek coming in and the staff that he may bring with him along with Phil, we should be able to put something together.
D-backs defeat the Houston Astros yesterday, 4-1 the final. Another tremendous pitching performance for Bronson Arroyo. And a guy who's starting to live up to the advanced billing. An innings eater, a guy who will get you deep in games consistently. And Kirk Gibson took note of that after the game yesterday.
He was good. He was really good. He got the one run off him, but he cut it off. That's the important thing. It's what we always talk about. And he did a good job of that. And then we got the runs, and we got the win.
D-backs split two here. Now they play in Houston 2 games tonight and tomorrow. We'll talk with Bob Brenly a little bit later on about that series and some other things related to the D-backs at the moment, who are playing better baseball. I did want to take a moment in this first segment to talk about the ASU baseball coaching situation. As you know by now, Tim Esme resign. And I understand that in the grand scheme of things, in a very busy sports market, that ASU baseball may not hit the target with a lot of people, but obviously I'm sure many of you know that I have a deep association with Arizona State. I think this is really going to be interesting because there is a, number one, I think what we're finding in the first 48 to 72 hours is this is still a premier coaching job in college baseball because a lot of names are being thrown out and a lot of, in the college baseball world, big names, names you may not be familiar with, but names that are in the college baseball industry are very big names. There's also a groundswell of support for Pat Murphy. If you're not familiar with the situation, Pat Murphy, who coached at ASU for 14 years, was dismissed from ASU after the 2009 season, November of 2009, in the midst of an investigation into some practices in terms of running his program that were deemed unacceptable by the university. But later, the university admitted failings in its investigation, and Murphy was cleared. It's a situation similar, I've been told, to the Bruce Pearl situation where a period of time passes and he's allowed to return to coaching again without any restrictions. There are two things. Tim Esme is a guy I've known since the day he stepped on campus. Tremendous, loyal Sun Devil, worked extremely hard, and I wish him nothing but the best. But being that I'm my roots are with ASU baseball, I want ASU to be back on the national stage again. And if Pat Murphy can do that, and if you think of Pat Murphy's last 5 years in Tempe, going back to 2004, they were regular participants in the College World Series. They were very close to a national championship a couple of times. I wouldn't mind being in that position again. And Murph has had time away to kind of reassess his life. And I'd be interested to hear how he feels about the idea of coming back to college baseball. He's currently managing the Padres AAA club in El Paso. But there are a lot of other great candidates out there, so it'll be interesting to say the least. And I think it also says a lot about Ray Anderson as an athletic director that he's moved swiftly, decisively, and held ASU athletics up to a very high standard of performance. And it was particularly with the baseball movie, as said. We expect better, and we need to get better. Tim Kempton will be with us next to talk about the NBA Finals, the upcoming draft, and that's not all the Suns are going to be up to this offseason, so we'll visit with TK coming up after a break on a Wednesday on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Hi there. It is a Wednesday. This is the Brad Sesmatt Show, and I forgot to mention this earlier. I'm Jeff Munn from the Arizona Diamondbacks in for Brad today. And we are at sports360az.com. That's where you can find us. That's where you can find lots of podcasts, lots of the latest news on Arizona sports. You can find a lot of things right now. And at AZ Central, thank you, Eric. I forgot about that. AZ Central, hello, AZ Central. Good to have you with us today as well. One of the fun things about doing this show is I get to talk to people I normally don't get to talk to away from this show. In part because they won't answer my calls, but also because I just don't have time to talk to them. And one of them is Tim Kempton, my buddy from the Suns, radio broadcast analyst, and one of the most well-learned basketball people I know. And he joins us for a few minutes to talk all kinds of things, particularly the NBA Finals. TK, long time no talk.
Money, what's up, brother?
You, my man. You. Summer treating you well?
Summer's treat me well. Nice and hot. I've got a floppy hat on, my sunscreen. I'm ready to go.
Hey, you told me that you go to this golf thing in Toledo. I was there for the NCAAs. When is that thing?
It's usually in the beginning of July. It's a Notre Dame golf outing that they have every year in Toledo. A guy there with the Notre Dame Club of Ohio puts it on every year. It gets a bunch of buddies to come back, so we all get to relive our glory days and yuck it up and have a good time in Toledo, Ohio.
Little humid there in July.
Yes, it is.
Well, you no doubt have had a chance to watch these games in detail. I look at my thought last night, and I said in the first segment, I listened to a lot of the game on the radio. I didn't have a chance. I was in my car and didn't have a chance to see it. But the thought that kept running through my mind was, I thought back to game one and all the threes that the Spurs knocked down at the end, and I thought, well, okay, they're not going to do that every night. And then they come out in game three, and they start knocking down shots at an alarming rate all over again. When it happens twice, you start thinking to yourself, is this some kind of breakdown with Miami's defense?
Well, it's not a breakdown with Miami's defense. It's just that the Spurs' offense is too good, Jeff. which leads to the breakdown of the Miami defense. The Miami defense, you know, is predicated on rotations, and most teams in the NBA, the other 28 that are sitting at home, don't move the ball as well as the San Antonio Spurs do. The Spurs play the game the way it's supposed to be played. It's fun to watch. It's a dying brand of basketball in today's day and age of self-promotion and isolations that occur, all the way down to the high school level now. But it's the breakdown of their defense, because the offense of the San Antonio Spurs and the willingness to make the next pass and the next pass and the next pass after that makes it very difficult for the Miami Heat to keep up with the ball.
Well, this is, and I've heard other guys say this around the country, that the thing that is so hard to deal with their half-court sets is a lot of teams will have a second option in a half-court set. The Spurs seem to have not only a second, but a third. And my question to you is that just a product of the experience that the core players have in the Popovich system, or just the fact that they're so adept at finding that third option?
Well, it's everything that you mentioned right there. You know, it's the consistency throughout the organization for so many years, Greg Popovich being there. And then you look at the stars, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, Tony Parker, and how good their bench is. You know, I was sitting there with my kids last night, and I asked them, I said, hey, who's the leading scorer in the Olympics in 2012? And it took them about 12 guesses to get all the way down to Patty Mills. They do a phenomenal job with the sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth guy, giving them responsibility, giving them confidence to do what they're capable of doing when they're on the court. So it's the consistency of the organization. It's the consistency of Greg Popovich, and it's also the willingness of the players that it's not about me. It's about the team and San Antonio getting another championship, and oh, by the way, we're part of that, so that championship is ours as well.
I think it's partly why when teams are looking, and obviously I think of Oklahoma City at first with Sam Presti, when teams are looking to fill out front office jobs, they look at San Antonio, and it's not just because, oh, they got Duncan and Leonard or Parker and Ginobili, but it's what R.C. Buford and Greg Popovich have done, drafting Kawhi Leonard. You mentioned Patty Mills. Patty Mills was basically out of this league a couple of years ago. Marco Bellinelli, he only played 6 minutes last night, but Bellinelli's another guy. Lots of promise, lots of potential. Never really realized it anywhere else, but he's become a very nice additional piece to have on the bench in San Antonio.
Well, the one thing that San Antonio does, and I just think this is more on the court with Greg Popovich and his coaching staff, is he identifies what those players are good at. You mentioned Marco Bellinelli. You know, last night he played only 6 minutes, but couple of seconds was a big three-pointer. They don't ask those guys to do things they're not capable of doing. They put them in the position to be successful. When you're on the court for 6 minutes, you're going to get looks. You're going to get shots that are in your area of expertise. They're not asking those guys to go out there and beat the Miami Heat by themselves. And that's what's unique about San Antonio, is that they identify these players and they identify their strengths. And when they come to San Antonio, that's what they exploit. They exploit their strengths. Just because they were successful at another team, they're not asking them to do something more. They're asking them to do what they're very capable of doing, and then exploit that to the best degree.
Suns analyst Tim Kempton joining us. Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. All right, in a lot of circumstances, when you have a game like Game 3, some people may say, wow, this series looks like it's over. I think it's just the opposite. I can't wait to see tomorrow night. And the main reason is I want to see what adjustments Eric Spoelstra makes and what adjustments the players with the Heat make defensively. They are a good defensive team. I want to see what they do to try to change some things up.
Exactly, and I think that's a great point, Jeff. Because at this point of the year, Miami's not just going to roll over. And I'm not a big fan of a 20-point loss is terrible. It's as terrible as a 1-point loss. You lost the game. Let's move on. You know, they rebounded pretty well from that first game. LeBron James coming out and scoring 35. What gets lost is the defensive job that San Antonio did so well in that first half. They're making 75-76% of your shots, so that's the obvious thing to latch on. But what you look at is the defense of San Antonio and how they stopped LeBron James from getting to the basket early, like he did in the second game that got him going. And if he gets into the paint, draws two or three defenders, then you're going to open up those guys on the perimeter for those open looks. We saw Rashard Lewis do it there a little bit in the third quarter when they made the run to get it to 9. But defensively, I think San Antonio did a phenomenal job in last night's game as well, and that gets a little bit overlooked because they shot the ball so well overall.
Well, the other thing, and I'll transition into the Suns in a minute, but the other thing is that their transition defense wasn't tested a lot early last night because they didn't have to get in transition very much.
It sure helps. You know what, money in basketball, when you're making shots, it makes everything else so much easier. Just like you said, you don't have to run back as quickly on transition defense. You know, the rebounding, you don't have to rebound the ball when it's going through the hoop all the time on the offensive end to work hard there. Making shots in the game of basketball covers up a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, and I the coach I work with during the winter, and she's in my ear all the time saying, they can't fast break off a made hoop. I'm like, okay, you're right. All right, the Suns, a couple of things. I heard somebody say today, and it was a guy in L.A. who covers the Lakers, saying, you know, one thing the Lakers could do is call the Suns and talk to them about swapping spots in the draft. And I'm like, what? Why would they want to do that?
Well, I think in essence they realize it's more of a rebuilding process, you know. And if they switch spots with the Suns, they're looking for draft picks. So if they were to sway, it wouldn't be one for one; it'd be one pick for two or three, and getting their pick back that was in the Steve Nash trade and everything. They need players. They don't have a lot of them right now, and they need players, and if they want to win in Kobe's day and age, they need players quickly. So that being as deep as this draft is, or as what the experts are saying it is, if they're thinking to move now, I think it would be in essence to get more players or players that they think are more ready to compete in the NBA right now alongside Kobe, knowing that he only has 2 years left on his contract.
Now, from the Suns' standpoint, even with the great season they had last year, aren't they still in that same kind of mode? This is a deep draft, and they have three first-round picks, and they can still approach it like, we can really deepen this roster by bringing in three first-rounders?
Well, yes and no, Jeff, because you look at it, and in today's day and age, these guys are so young. You want to build off what you did last year with 48, and you're not going to do that with three rookies. First of all, they aren't going to get a lot of playing time, all three of them. One, maybe if he shines, two, possibly. But three, it's very difficult to work three rookies into the lineup. You look at what happened with Archie Goodwin and Alex Len this year. Archie Goodwin got in, showed some stuff, like he was making progress, and then towards the end of the year really didn't get a lot of playing time. So the idea, yes, is to get deeper, to get better, but I believe it's a combination of draft picks, free agent signings with veterans, and that's where you may be able to use those assets of the draft picks, is to get a guy with 4 or 5 years experience in the NBA, and that'll promote the continued success of the Suns. Right now, you don't want to take a step back. Oh, we're still in our building phase, and all of a sudden you put three rookies out there on the court with Goran Dragic and Channing Frye one night. That's not going to get it done at the NBA level. You still need experience, especially with all these kids that are coming out that are 18, 19, years old. It takes them 3, 4, 5 years to get where they're actually giving something to you every night, contributing to the success of the franchise.
Wish we had more time to talk. It's bound to be a very interesting, especially a couple days leading up to the draft, right after the finals, and the finals themselves still have a potential to be really great. Great to hear from you, Tim. We'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds good, buddy. Take care, buddy.
You too, my friend. Tim Kempton, outstanding analyst with the Suns, and you learn something. The really great analysts are the guys that you learn something from them every time you listen to them, and Tim certainly fits that category working with the Hall of Famer, Al McCoy. When we come back, another guy that fits that category, Bob Brenly, D-backs TV analyst. And I want to ask him, first of all, he has his manager's hat on, and he's watching what Bo Porter's doing, putting Tony Sipp in right field. What was his thought about that? We'll discuss a lot of things with the D-backs coming up. Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com and AZCentral.com.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/Sports360AZ.
Brad Sesmatch Show on a Thursday. No, it's Wednesday. That day game yesterday's got my entire calendar mixed up. It is Wednesday, and if I've said Thursday, I'm sorry. I've probably mixed you up as well.
It's one of those weird Tuesday.
Well, yeah,
getaway days
because they went to Houston,
home and home things,
and they have to get there at a decent hour,
right?
So guys like Bob Brenly are raring to go tonight for the opener of the 2-game set at Minute Maid Park, and D-backs TV analyst Bob Brenly joins us. I was just going to say, he works in another room, and I don't get to see him very often during games. This is another case where I get to talk to a guy I don't get to talk to much at work. But he's in Houston getting ready for tonight's game. BB, how are you?
Doing real good, money. Isn't this Monday? What day is it?
Yeah, I can't keep track. Before I ask you about the D-backs, I did not get a chance to hear your reaction Monday to the moves that Bo Porter made. And with a manager's hat on, I wanted to hear what you thought. And I'm going to try to do this in capsule form. Basically, in the eighth inning, he had Tony Sipp as what he said was his only available left-hander in that spot. D-backs go left, right, left in terms of their hitters. So he gets the first guy, Parra, as a left-hander. Right-hander's up next, and he moves Sipp to right field, brings on a right-handed pitcher who walks Goldschmidt, and he puts Sipp back. When that was all unfolding, what was your thought?
Well, I was a little puzzled. I mean, as you said, Bo Porter said that Tony was his only available left-hander, which seems kind of odd since they had just called up a left-hander from the minor leagues, and it doesn't seem to make any sense to call up a guy if he's not available. Another factor for me is the fact that Tony Sipp has held righties to like a 170 average and lefties to 140. I mean, his numbers are ridiculously good this year against both righties and lefties. And, you know, if you're going to bring in Jerome Williams, it was clear to me was pitching around Goldie anyway. He wasn't going to throw him anything to hit. Why not just let Tony Sipp go ahead and walk Paul Goldschmidt, and then he's in the game to face Montero? I think what we saw was an American League manager going above and beyond, trying to prove to everybody that he knew how to handle his roster and make the bizarre sabermetric moves late in a ball game. But really, for me, it was all unnecessary and time-consuming.
Well, and that gets to something that I think a lot of people talked about yesterday. When these American League clubs come into National League ballparks or play by National League rules, there's a real danger on the part of the manager of the AL team. There's a danger that he'll overmanage his way into a loss.
Well, and it certainly has happened. And, I mean, I don't limit it to American League managers. Occasionally a National League manager will box himself into a corner by overusing his roster or putting too much emphasis on a statistical fact that maybe isn't that significant and really doesn't figure into that particular situation. And yeah, I think that's what we saw with Bo Porter. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would venture to guess that right-handers hit Jerome Williams better than they hit Tony Sipp. So, and, you know, just for a lot of reasons, it seemed like an unnecessary move.
Okay, let's flip it around real quick. The D-backs go into an American League park. They have the DH. Kirk Gibson's played with I don't want to say shorthanded because nobody's hurt, but he has one less position player than you would normally have, and now he's down to three because he's using a bench player to fill the DH spot, essentially. On the surface, you would say, well, he's not really that hamstrung because you're not doing that much pinch hitting and you don't double switch in the American League. Is he at a disadvantage by having just three guys on the bench tonight?
I don't think so. I mean, Gibby's not a guy that pinch hits a lot for his players late in the game to try to get that favorable matchup, and especially with a four-man bench, one of those being your backup catcher. You play it like American League game. You put your best nine hitters out there as you see on a given day, and you ride your pitcher as long as you can because you know his spot is not coming up with the DH in effect. So I think in an American League game, you can get away with a short bench a lot easier than you can in a National League game.
Bob Brenly, D-backs TV analyst, be working with Steve Bertheum tonight on Fox Sports Arizona as the D-backs face the Astros 5:10 Arizona time first pitch. A lot of talk also about Chase Anderson, and Miguel Montero said something to me the other day, BB, about Chase Anderson. He said, well, he's got average to above average stuff, but the biggest thing with him is he's not afraid to get hit. And a lot of young pitchers, and you know this very well, I've heard pitching coaches and managers say this over the years, the toughest thing to convince a young pitcher when he comes to the big leagues is accepting the fact that his stuff is going to get hit.
Well, and I think there's a big difference between getting hit hard and getting hit. What I've seen from Chase Anderson and what's really impressed me is his ability to keep his fastball out of the middle of the plate. I said it the very first time we saw him against the White Sox, and it continues every time we see him out there. He keeps his fastball at knee level across the bottom of the zone, just above the top of the zone, and on the corners. Rarely do you see him throw a fastball where a hitter can really get a good pass at it and barrel it up and hit the ball hard. They make contact with a lot of those borderline fastballs, but it's weak contact and he gets some quick outs. So I think because of his command of that fastball, it allows him to have that courage to go right at hitters because he rarely makes mistakes over the middle of the plate where they get hit hard.
Now, obviously, young pitchers, they can't all have tremendous command coming up. But given all the discussion about Tommy John injuries and the emphasis on velocity, doesn't it surprise you that we don't hear more emphasis being put on young pitchers about the importance of location as opposed to just trying to blow the ball by hitters?
You know, it was interesting watching Bronson Arroyo go about pitching against that young Astros ball club yesterday. And, I mean, he just teased them to death. You know, they kept waiting for that 93-mile-an-hour fastball that just was never going to come. And about the time they thought they had a bead on his mid-80s fastball, he'd take a couple more miles an hour off or add a couple more miles an hour. I think not only because of the Tommy John surgeries and the rash of arm injuries in baseball, basically because guys are just trying to throw max effort every pitch, I think we might see a pendulum swing back to guys like Greg Maddux and Bronson Arroyo and Tom Glavine who, you know, maybe don't light up a radar gun, but they know how to pitch. I mean, hitters are so conditioned nowadays, we see it on a daily basis. They can turn around a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Big league hitters can hit any velocity you happen to throw up there. But if you add a little, subtract a little, now you're really playing with their brains, and they're so trained to be on that fastball, beyond the fastball, that if you can throw something other than a fastball or take something off of your fastball, a lot of these guys can't make the adjustment quickly enough, and before they know it, you're into the seventh inning, and you know Bronson Arroyo's put zeros on the board, and you turn it over to your bullpen, and next thing you know, you've got a victory. I think we're going to see a swing back at guys who maybe don't throw quite as hard, but know how to pitch.
Bob Brenly of the D-backs TV team joining us for a few minutes on the Brad Sesmat Show. I said to a friend a couple weeks ago when things were still really close to rock bottom, I just said, look, if this team just plays better baseball games, the other stuff will take care of itself. There's no talk about standings, catching this team, catching that team. You just want to play better baseball. We saw that. We've seen that for a while. And we saw it in general, in particular on this homestand. Five games, all of them highly entertaining, and all of them games that the D-backs were in, even the games they lost. When you kind of take the temperature of the mood and the confidence level of the D-backs right now, it is a lot higher than it was a month ago, isn't it?
No, I don't think there's any question about it. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with some of the guys that came up from the minor leagues. David Peralta has been a real nice surprise. And, you know, with A.J. Pollock going down, Ender Inciarte at least defensively has picked up the slack out in center field. And occasionally he'll come up with a big hit and his speed is a dimension that with Pollock gone, you'd like to have somebody in there that can score from first on an extra base hit. So Yeah, I think the attitude's been a lot better. For the most part, the defense has really improved. That's kind of a thing we don't talk about a lot, but defensively, this was not a good ball club in the early part of the season. And, you know, gradually they've gotten better. We know, you know as well as I do, Money, they work hard on it every day, and they're starting to see some of the fruits of that hard work with their defense. And, you know, the starting pitching, guys getting deeper into the ball game, it really all plays off of that, the starting pitching. If those guys can get deeper into the ball game, it just sets everything up for you, to give you an opportunity to win a game. But when the starters were getting blown up like they were in the first month of the season, and, you know, you're into the bullpen in the second or third inning of a ball game, and offensively you're behind by four or five runs early every night, it's tough. It's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel, but I think we've seen much better baseball lately. And in regards to the standings, they are sneaking up on people. They're only a half a game behind the Padres going into play today. They're only two games behind the Rockies. Now, you know, granted, it's not where they want to be, but it gives you a tangible goal to shoot for, to try to pass a couple teams, maybe three teams in our division.
Bob Brenly of the D-backs with us. Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat on the Wednesday edition of the Brad Sesmat Show. In relation to the players that have come up, there's been a lot of talk recently about finding ways to get Didi Gregorius's bat in the lineup more often. And Kirk Gibson has talked a little bit about, well, he might be an option to back up Prado at third with Chavez on the DL. He's even talked about utilizing Gregorius in center field. The reason I bring that up, and you have experience with this, obviously, from your days as a manager, he's basing that decision on using Didi in center field on his communication with Phil Nevin at AAA. And it brings up a really an unspoken type of thing about managing. Your AAA manager, when you're in a position like that with players, you really have to depend on what that guy down at AAA is telling you about a player, and it makes that relationship you have with the guy down at AAA as a big league manager so important.
Oh, no question about it. And, you know, we've seen it already this year, and we'll continue to see it as we move forward in this season. We're going to need some reinforcements from time to time. Guys get hurt. Guys struggle offensively. They struggle on the mound, and maybe there's somebody down there that's throwing the ball particularly well, and it might not always be the marquee names that you expect. You know, I think back to that 0-1 season when we reached out for Robert Ellis. Now, I don't believe Robert Ellis was on anybody's radar, but when we called down and talked to the guys in Tucson, who's the best pitcher on the staff right now? It was unanimous. Robert Ellis is throwing the ball better than anybody else. Well, then get him up here. And we brought Robert Ellis up to the big leagues in 0-1, and he won some big games for us filling in that rotation. And you've got to trust that your people in AAA know what it is you're looking for and know how to evaluate their own players. I mean, I don't think it's any surprise that Didi would be capable of playing outfield. He's a great athlete. So, you know, but that gave the Diamondbacks an opportunity to see if Didi could handle playing outfield down at the AAA level without, you know, putting him in a big league game and not knowing what you're going to get. That's where you develop players, and sometimes that development isn't just a one position. It might be at multiple positions, and Didi's a guy that's athletic enough, I think, to play anywhere on the field.
Bob Brenly with us. After the two games in Houston, the club goes to Los Angeles, plays the Dodgers. There's been a lot of talk in the last week. I got about a minute. Don Mattingly has been, he's basically been blown off a lot of steam about the play of his club. And I remember a couple of things that he said all the way back to when they got Hanley Ramirez. He had an interesting quote that night in 2012. He said, well, they can't all bat third. And he's also said things at times this year about the fact that I don't have a guy in this lineup that is willing to hit a ball to the right side to get a guy to third base. And when people say, what's wrong with the Dodgers? That's one thing that you have to point at. They may have a lot of all-stars, but as Ozzie Guillen once said when he was in Miami, all that guarantees you is a nice-looking lineup card.
Well, that figures. Ozzie has a way to cut to the chase when it comes to stuff like that. But it's absolutely correct. I mean, you've got guys who are used to being a star. They're used to being the centerpiece of the team, you know, offensively. And the guy that gets his picture on the sports page every day. And, you know, when all those guys aren't clicking and when all of them aren't happy, it's inevitable you're going to have some issues. That's one of the toughest jobs a manager has to deal with is, you know, figuring out how to use all these guys to best win a ball game on a given night, which means that some nights you're going to have superstars sitting on the bench. And part of your job is to make sure those guys understand why it is they're not playing today and when they're going to play again and what you expect from them under the circumstances. And either they haven't accepted Don Mattingly's advice or they've listened to it and just decided they're going to do their own thing. I mean, you know, superstars are great to have when everything is clicking, but superstars can be huge divas when things aren't working out well.
D-backs in Houston tonight at 5:10, tomorrow at 5:10. Bob will be with Steve Bertheum on the TV side and in Los Angeles over the weekend against the Dodgers. Bob, I really appreciate the time. Have a good show tonight.
Good talking to you, Money. Take care.
Bob Brenly. And, boy, have we been lucky today. Tim Kemp and Bob Brenly, two outstanding game analysts who really break it down as well as anybody. And it's been a delight to talk with both of them. We come back. I get to do a segment called Munn's Fun Things. I'm going to talk a little bit about weight loss commercials, and I'm going to talk about Terminal 3 at Sky Harbor. When they get ready to bulldoze that thing, I want to drive. We'll come back and explain after this on Sports360AZ.com, AZCentral.com, and anywhere else you happen to be listening to this show today.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at Sports360AZ.com.
Auto Wednesday. I did remember what day of the week it is that time. This is the Brad Sesmat Show, Sports360AZ.com, AZCentral.com. Remember now, if you're not on Sports360AZ.com at the moment, and you're with us on AZ Central or anywhere else that you happen to be catching this show, remember, head to Sports360AZ.com. Terrific content, great stories, Arizona sports related, and you also get podcasts. You get replays of Brad's show. He also has his blog, Three Dot Thoughts, and it's constantly updated. We have people here in the middle of the night that are, you know, working very hard for very high wages because you can't always get professional people in at 3 in the morning. So they're here constantly updating this thing. Eric Sorensen's worked in the middle of the night before, and he can speak from experience. This thing is constantly monitored. People are all, and you never miss a thing when you're on this website. All right, this is called Munn's Fun Things, and I'm going to let Eric get in on this if he feels so inclined.
Oh, I have to. I mean, if they're fun, who doesn't want to be a part of them?
I watched a commercial this morning on TV, which is primarily where you watch commercials a lot of time.
Correct.
Thank you. For a nationally known weight loss program that I actually happened to be on when we first got started, which is another story, and I'm not going to go into it now. But I've watched these weight loss commercials. Have you ever noticed when they show the before and after pictures, especially with women, that when they were before and they were heavy, and then they're, you know, they lose 80 pounds, their hair color changes?
Fascinating. Good point.
And it always, see, the reason I bring that up is you always want to validate this really is the person that it was before. And how can you tell if they changed from a brunette to a blonde? And what causes, I really would like to know, what causes somebody, man or woman, to say, I lost 80 pounds, I'm going to change my hair color?
Midlife crisis? I don't know.
Could be. I don't understand that. Listen, I lost 60 pounds in this program back in 1979. You didn't see me changing my hair color, because I was 21. But
you lost that much weight?
I'll tell a quick story.
Wow.
I was working at a radio station here in town, and I'll say the name of this company. It's Nutrisystem. And they were just getting started, and they wanted the air staff, two guys on the air staff, to be basically do testimonials. So obviously you can't do a testimonial unless you're on the program. And I was very heavy at the time. Actually, I weigh more now than I did when I got on that program. I'm just bigger and stronger, and also I'm sitting behind a desk, and you can't tell. And it worked. I mean, the food and their menu now, I'm not doing commercials for Nutrisystem, but their menu now is a lot better than it used to be. That was the most gaggliest tasting stuff I've ever had in my life. But son of a gun, the pounds just flew off. And my metabolism got so messed up that for like 2 weeks after I went off the diet, I was still losing weight, despite the fact that my parents, who were getting concerned, I was beginning to look really thin. They would take me at night to buffets. Did I say that? There was a guy who used to call it that.
Buffets,
thank you.
You were bordering on frail, dare we say?
I was bordering on frail, and they would take me to buffets, all-you-can-eat buffets, and load me up, and the next day I'd still lose a pound.
It's not the right way to approach it when you're gaining weight. Yeah, but at that time, I guess you guys didn't know any better.
Yeah. So. I'm fascinated by the fact that when you look at these before and after pictures, and I hate to be sexist about it, but it's true with women. I never see this with guys. They change their hair color. It's like, how can I tell that that's really you if you keep changing your stinking hair color? All right. That's one. Item number two. I went to pick up a friend last night at Terminal 3 at Sky Harbor.
A friend, huh?
She was on Delta. Mm. Yeah, a friend. What? Listen, I've not talked about this a lot in the public media, and you can notice I don't have a wedding ring. I'm not ashamed of this. I am divorced. I'm not going to go into the circumstances because it's not fun for me to talk about, but I am unattached, and I was picking a lady friend up at the airport, okay? There you go.
Thanks for the full disclosure.
Inquiring
again,
minds want to know. Now they know.
The producer's being nosy. Just
I know.
Cut my mic off.
It's your job.
I'm going
to cut
it off.
I can't cut your mic off. I don't know what button it is.
I just did.
Oh, okay. Well, no, keep your mic on. I like having you involved in this. Terminal 3's a dump. I mean, it's a good terminal. I mean, it's not a dump in the sense that there's, you know, rats running around and everything, but they got rid of... I hadn't been in there in a couple of years, and I do travel a lot in the winter with ASU. They got rid of Dick Clark's American Bandstand Grill. What are these people thinking? They put in the Budweiser Bowtie Lounge. That's okay, but come on. I want to go in and have breakfast and listen to Chubby Checker. I mean, it's like, what are they doing? And I know there's been a lot of talk. I guess there is some discussion now that American and U.S. Airways are merging. And Americans moved to Terminal 4. They're trying to decide. I know that at some point they're going to blow up Terminal 2, which is, you know, a lot of people. I discussed this. I was at a thing with back in November with Sal DeCiccio, who's a Phoenix City councilman. And I was joking with him. It's like, how many calls do you get a week about where is Terminal 1? There is no Terminal 1 at Sky Harbor, just 2, 3, 4. And he kind of laughed and he said, well, yeah, we got to do something about that, and we're going to blow up Terminal 2, so we got to rename the terminals. We're going to be down to 2 terminals. And I guess the airlines that are at Terminal 2 now, which I think is United, Alaska, somebody else, and I can't think of who it is, they're all going to go over to Terminal 3. But Terminal 3 is just like, ugh. I would hate to work in Terminal 3. I'd hate to work at the Starbucks. I'd hate to work at any of the food counters. Because there's nobody there. Once after 5 o'clock, it's a ghost town. Oh, can't stand it. Terminal 4 is where it's at, kids. I mean, even if you're a lonely guy like me and you're just looking for something to do and watch people, go to Terminal 4.
It's a great, no better people watching than at the airport.
Absolutely. It's the Terminal best. 4 is great for people watching. And they have a Cold Stone. How can you do any better than people watching and Cold Stone ice cream? Seriously. Anyway, I had to get that out. It's just a Terminal 3. And that used to be the hot place. Terminal 3 used to be the really hopping joint at Sky Harbor a long time ago. Not no more. And like I said, when they get ready to bulldoze that puppy, I'm driving.
Weight loss in airports.
Weight loss this in airports. This is why you sign up for the internet, friends. This is why you go to azcentral.com. This is why you go to sports360az.com to hear talk about weight loss. And why do women change their hair color when they lose weight? And Terminal 3. And thank goodness the music's rolling, so we don't have to get into what I had for item 3, because that would have completely shut this website down and made a lot of people who are sponsors of this show really angry with me. I'm just kidding. Busy day in sports. NBA Finals, D-backs playing better baseball. And we got all kinds of things to discuss, so stick around. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show for Wednesday. Yes, I do remember what day of the week it is. Brad's back tomorrow, and we're back on sports360az.com and azcentral.com.